I'm Joe Cockright. We've been visiting with author Anne Rice. Her son, Christopher Rice, is also a best-selling author. His latest book is called The Heavens Rise. Christopher, this is your sixth novel. This particular story is unrelated to your other books.
It is, yes. It's a standalone.
Do you see that maybe some of these characters might branch off into other books?
I hope so. Yeah. But I've said that about every book. I think the challenge of the previous books being thrillers where the characters weren't immortal, per se, or they didn't have supernatural abilities, is that you put them through such hell, you have to have a really good reason to bring them back. You know, it's different if you're dealing with a detective, which I had one book called Light Before Day, which was really a detective novel, but I like to really put my characters through the ringer. And so if you're going to bring them back for a new story, you have to deal with the emotional trauma that they went through in the previous one, which can take away from the new story you want to tell.
That brings me to the question, 3 years in between books, hard work for you, or are you just taking time to get everything right?
I was taking time to get everything right, and I was really taking time to make sure that my supernatural universe was consistent and coherent. I didn't want to. It was my first time dealing with the supernatural. I knew it was going to be more of a sci-fi-based mythology that I was rolling out in this book, but I didn't want it to feel like Lost in the third season, you know, where it was just like there's no sense of where anything was headed, and people were pulling stuff out of their hats, and once I hit on the fact that I wanted to write a book about a mind control parasite, which was actually not on my list of what I was going to write about when I started to prepare this novel, I thought, okay, how can I make the explanation for this simple and elegant, and how can I make it so that it will allow enough room for a character-driven story to be told around it and with it?
Well, you've already revealed a little bit about the mind control parasite, as you said, which is the way the story sets up and everything. That's not immediately revealed,
no.
But you don't mind revealing that now for the listeners out there.
No, I don't. I think it's revealed fairly early on. What isn't revealed until later, which I won't spoil for anyone, is the terrible cost when this power is used incorrectly or irresponsibly. That's the big reveal at the end of the book.
How long did you live with this idea before you committed it to paper?
Well, I'll tell you, I lived with the characters longer than I lived with the idea. I knew the first decision I made that began the process of writing this book was the decision that I would write about New Orleans again, which I had said I would never do. And I thought, particularly in the wake of Katrina, that I shouldn't do it because I hadn't lived there around Katrina. I'd left about 5 or 6 years before the storm hit. I felt unfamiliar with the new New Orleans, the recovering New Orleans. And a lot of my friends who still live there or had a deep continuing connection to the city said, that's bunk. You should totally feel free to write about the city again, specifically if you have an emotional need, which I did. My first novel, A Density of Souls, was a very angry novel. It was a young man's novel, and it had a very harsh and unforgiving view of some segments of the New Orleans community, and I wanted to go back and tell a kinder, gentler New Orleans story. Now, because I'm a Rice, that turned out to be a horror novel. But at the same time, the characters are united by their love of the city. So anyway, to answer your question, that's what started it. And originally, I had planned to write about the riverboat pilots, the local riverboat pilots associations. They're very controversial. They get paid $300,000 a year. They have incredible lobbying power in Baton Rouge. They lobby against big oil, which makes for an interesting dynamic. And I was thinking in terms of some conspiracy thriller about one of the riverboat pilots, but I kept thinking about this girl, Nikki DeLongpre, and I kept outlining her, and I knew she had disappeared when all my characters were teenagers and that her disappearance had emotionally leveled her boyfriend and her best friend, and I couldn't put my finger on what was the cause of her disappearance and what made her so mysterious. And then I realized one day she's got a supernatural ability, you know, and she's got the type of supernatural ability that she's not necessarily afraid will hurt the people close to her, but she's afraid she will be tempted to use it on them in ways that are unethical or immoral, and that is mind control. So from that, I ended up at the parasite idea last, you know, because it was, well, what is the vehicle for the supernatural gift that I want to describe?
For a writer, that's got to be an exciting moment when you start to see the story reveal itself to you.
Yes.
It sounds like you started with these friends, essentially.
Yes.
And then it was built upon there, and then the next thing you know, the story just comes to you that way.
Absolutely.
That's exciting. I asked this of your mother. Maybe you can describe the space that you write. She said you can write in a cafe. Is that true?
Well, you know, I did for a while, and I started this book in a cafe, but then you have to go to the bathroom, and you have to get up and leave your stuff and ask somebody to watch it, and it reaches a point where I think this is more trouble than it's worth. The people that I were around me when I was working at the cafe were the people who simply couldn't work at home because home was the distraction. They would go on the internet, or they would go, which you could just as easily do at a cafe these days. So I did begin the process of writing this novel, but what I really have done is liberate myself from my desk, primarily for the very simple reason of that I'd have back problems if I write too long at a desk. Mm-hmm. I'm 6'3" and I hunch over. And so trying to make myself physically comfortable while I write has been important. But I have a MacBook Air, which my lovely mother gave me as a Christmas present one year, which I'm able to carry around wherever I go. But I'm still stationary. I'm still in a big comfy chair. And I've got a lap pillow on, and I've got to bat my two ragdoll cats away because I always want to be up on the computer while I'm writing. But that's how the process works.
At the heart of this story, a battle of good and evil. You've got characters that have supernatural abilities, like your mother's wolf story. Mm-hmm. Is there a superhero in this story?
There are potential superheroes. This is a novel about ordinary human beings being gifted with something extraordinary and deciding whether or not to accept the gift, which I think is also a theme in Mom's works as well. But I think in this book, they are further on the human side. And in particular, there are those who have rejected the gift. There are those who feel it can't be used in a moral way. And these are all the classic questions of any superhero story. What there is there's a very clearly defined villain in this novel who is given this amazing power and wants to use it for one reason only, and that's revenge. And it's revenge over a slight that's 8 years old. And I think his sense of entitlement and his childishness are really the root of his evil, his complete self-obsession. And he's surrounded by characters who are completely invested in the fate of New Orleans as a city. So his pathological selfishness and immaturity is the evil in the novel.
Our guest is author Christopher Rice. You're the son of an award-winning poet and, of course, a best-selling author, and your aunt as well, also an author.
Yes.
Does it seem sometimes that you were just doomed to a life of being a writer? I mean, can you see yourself doing anything else?
Well, you know, I wanted to be an actor. I was the king of the high school's theater club. I went off to Brown University convinced that I would storm their theater department, and they proved to be heavily fortified. And I didn't get called back for a single audition my freshman year. I see now in retrospect, that's normal for freshmen. But for this freshman, it didn't seem normal. I had always been a voracious reader and a star English student. I had won most of the English awards in high school. It had come very naturally to me, so naturally to me that I had taken it for granted, really. And I had some ambition that I would write material that I would perform in as an actor. But when I experienced that rejection, I discovered this juicy connection to my own computer that I didn't need an audition or a callback for. I didn't know at the time, and I didn't think much at the time of what would come of what I was writing, but the stage had been taken away, and so I needed another outlet, and that was it. And so I began writing horrible plays my freshman year of high school, just terrible plays. But I got them all out of my system, and some threads of them were folded into later stuff that was actually quite better. And that's how it started. But, you know, a famous actor, Brian Batt, who was on Mad Men for very years, actually an alumnus of my high school, came to visit when I was a student there. And he said the old cliche that they say to aspiring actors, which is, if you can be happy doing anything else, go do that, because this is unbelievably hard. And ironically, they say that to writers as well. But the thing that I discovered that I was happy doing was writing. And I was happier doing it than I was pursuing acting. But on my internet radio show, we do a bit of acting now. On the Dinner Party Show with my friend Eric Shaw Quinn, we do comedic sketches. And so it feels like I'm acting, but I have the shelter of the microphone, much as we have today.
You mentioned the dinnerpartyshow.com. I guess that's where people can find the...
Yes.
And maybe you can describe for listeners what they can expect to hear on the Dinner Party Show.
Well, it's a comedy variety show, but my best friend Eric Shaw Quinn and I host it together, and some of the sketches are pre-recorded, and we have characters who are sort of like Weekend Update style special correspondents. But then we talk politics and pop culture, and we have celebrity guests. We try for a relaxed attitude. You know, the MSNBC slogan is lean forward, and Eric says we lean back. You know, we're very irreverent, but we can be serious, too. We have topics that we're passionate about. But it's part of this sort of fascinating new internet radio world. I mean, we are essentially our own radio station. We stream through a website, and we have a free mobile app, and we have podcasts as well.
Probably a lot of fun. Use a different part of your brain, I guess.
An absolutely different part of the brain. I think the most challenging part of it is that we write our original material very quickly, whereas as a novelist, I'm very slow and methodical, and I'm an obsessive reviser. With a show, we don't have the time. It's almost like writing is improv. We go with the first draft, and we go into the studio the next day and record it because I've got a book I need to spend the rest of the week on. So that's taught me to loosen up a lot.
Your father was a poet. Did you write any poetry? Did you ever have any ambition for that? Or
in high school.
Mm-hmm.
In high school, I did. It was very challenging. I find the shorter the work is supposed to be, the harder it is. Nothing is harder for me than short stories. I just think they're almost impossible. I spend longer on a short story than I do on the outline for a full novel.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a real gift for economy of language, and there was a lot of advice, that he gave about making your metaphors clear and precise that I use in my work today. You know, that I think Mom has recognized in my work and pointed out to me, which has been nice because I sort of forgot the advice, but it was clearly there in my brain.
Do you remember any advice that she may have given you about the book world?
Write the book you want to read.
Mm.
Write the book you
want to
read.
That's great advice.
Yeah. Don't write the book that you think will sell. Don't write the book that you think critics will love. Write the book that you want to read. And in this day and age, if you write the book you want to read and they don't want to publish it, you can publish it yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a completely new and different way.
What are some of your other favorite authors?
Well, aside from the two authors that I know personally, which is Anne Rice and Eric Jacquin, who are incredibly personally influential, but also their work and their work ethic is incredibly influential, as well as their material, I was very influenced by James Lee Burke. When I sat down to write Light Before Day, it was a shift for me tonally. So I read a lot of the detective novelists, Raymond Chandler, Ross McDonald, all those guys.
Yes.
And the one that really stuck with me is Ross McDonald. Because there is less style there, there is less affectation there, and there is a clarity and a compassion for his characters that I think you can carry into any genre that you're working in.
Do you have a favorite word?
Vivisect. I don't even know what it means, but it's my favorite word. It's got two V's in it. How can you not like a word that has two V's?
Two V's,
I just think it's great. Although I have to say, what was the other one you said earlier?
Magnificent?
No, it wasn't magnificent, and it wasn't entity. Those were
crystalline.
Yes. That's a pretty fantastic.
That is
word.
A good word.
Yeah,
yeah. Not many things rhyme with vivisect.
I wouldn't use it in a limerick at all.
No. what frightens you the most?
Loss of control. Anything that, and that was one of the reasons I hit on this concept in The Heavens Rise. It is literally somebody else can literally take control of your mind and your body, and you black out, and you're not even present. But when you come to, you have to deal with the consequences of what they did with you. And I think that's just an absolutely terrifying concept. But any situation like, I used to be a terrible flyer, I'm better now, but I have my moments, where, you know, we move through life powerless most of the time. We have the illusion of power. But there are certain situations that really call the question, and those are the ones that frighten me. But also, I'm very afraid of nature. And that's a theme in this book, too. When we moved to Louisiana, there was just a lot of nature. There was a lot of water. There was a lot of green. And for some people, that's very romantic. But coming from concrete canyons in San Francisco, where I was born, it was a culture shock. You know, it really was. And so that sense of constantly encroaching wildness can frighten me as well.
Our guest is author Christopher Rice. In this time that we live in, and of course, a lot of exciting things happening all around the world and a lot of dangerous things as well, glass half full or half empty?
Half full. And I think where I see that the most is on the internet. It's very easy to focus on the negative behavior of a lot of people online and miss out on the incredible confluence of souls that's happening online. That the new access to information, and that what may look like a clash of internet trolls is actually people fully engaging with each other for the first time. And I think that engagement has to be followed up by real world engagement. But the statistic that I read that gave me hope was that the airline industry was bracing for a slowdown in business as the result of social media sites like Facebook. And what they discovered was an acceleration of business because Facebook led to more people actually wanting to meet each other. They would have the online meeting, and then they would actually want to meet the other people. And I think the flattening of the world that Thomas Friedman talks about, while it has consequences for sure, as does any growth and evolution, there's an amazing, there are amazing shifts happening. You know, what's happening in the digital world with books, very similar. There are consequences and there are costs, and I don't want to see independent bookstores and physical bookstores go under, but there's another side of it. There's a gathering of information and a gathering of people, and hopefully once we're well gathered, we can decide how to deal with the costs.
Well, I hope we never see the removal of the great hardback books.
Yes.
Just something about opening up a hardcover book like I have here. Christopher Rice's The Heavens Rise and Anne Rice's The Wolves of Midwinter. There's just something about having that hard copy in your hand and in passing it along to somebody after you've read it, which
right.
I love
Absolutely.
To do as well. Christopher, let me ask you about the best Christmas gift that you ever received.
Oh, that's a tough one. I've been so blessed, and I was showered with gifts by this one over here every Christmas. But again, my best friend Eric Charquin is a perennial, well, not perennial, everybody's a perennial gift giver, unless they don't give anything, but he's an inveterate gift giver. I think it's probably my computer, which I'm still using and have written now several things on that Mom gave me several years ago. But I like being together with my family at Christmas. I know that's the schmaltzy Norman Rockwell answer, but it's the coming
reasonable.
Together. You know, I'm not somebody who hurt, for much growing up. I was very well provided for. So that sense of being with family on Christmas is incredibly valuable to me.
Shared moments, definitely a gift.
Right.
You know, when you have somebody that you love with you, that's a very reasonable gift and wonderful thing that most people forget about.
Right.
You know, so much of it becomes about the actual material things when it's more than that.
Right.
Christopher's mother, Anne Rice, is also here tonight. Anne, how do you feel about your son choosing a career as a writer?
I am so happy that he's gone into the profession. I didn't think that he was going to, and I would have been happy with anything he did, really, anything. If he sold popsicles, you know, it would have been cool. But he did become a novelist, and he became a novelist at the age of 22, and he went right to the New York Times bestseller list, and I was absolutely thrilled. And I'm very thrilled now that he's writing about the supernatural, because that gives us even more in common. I've loved his books. I've loved the thrillers he's written. And there are real page turners. He has a lot to teach me about pacing and suspense in a book. And an omniscient point of view. He's very good at that. But this supernatural book, I really connect with him on that. And I also love the fact that he's writing about New Orleans again, and that we have that in common. And he writes about a totally different New Orleans from the one that I know. He uses different language, different rhythms, and he sees different things and different characters, because he grew up there at a much different time from when I grew up there. And he knows different people. He knows a whole generation there that I don't really know. I only observed watching him grow up. So it's been kind of thrilling to see all that. But I'm very happy, because I think being a writer is the greatest life imaginable. So I'm very glad that he made that choice.
Our guests have been novelist Anne Rice and Christopher Rice. The latest book from Anne Rice is The Wolves of Midwinter, and Christopher Rice's new tale, The Heavens Rise. Both are on bookshelves now for purchase and available online wherever books are sold. Thank you all so much for joining me tonight.
It's been a pleasure.
I sure do appreciate it, and we hope that you'll come back to our fair city again.
I'd love to.
Maybe come in and see the horses run or something like that.
Yes.
Come
to Keeneland. I would so Absolutely. Love that. Oh, what a dream.
Come back in the spring when we do this.
Yes.
We'd love to have you come back again, pass through. Anne Rice and Christopher Rice, have a wonderful journey. Enjoy the rest of your tour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
I'm Joe Conkright. Thank you very much for listening.